Church leaders in the United Kingdom this past weekend led commemorations marking the 200th anniversary of the abolition of slavery in Britain, an event that has been marked across Africa and the Caribbean as well. March 25th was the bicentenary of the Act of Parliament which officially banned the slave trade across the former British Empire, a trade that is believed to have involved up to 25 million African men, women and children. In London, the Anglican Archbishops of Canterbury and York joined African government officials, leaders of other churches and thousands of ordinary people in an open-air commemoration focused around the themes remembrance, repentance and restoration. Music and drama accompanied the crowds as they reflected on the horrors of slavery and its legacy around the world today. Symbolic acts of witness included a group of people who had worn yokes and chains during a 250-mile walk from Hull in the north of England to London, being unshackled and released by the Archbishop of the West Indies. Down by the Thames, the church leaders said prayers as a wreath was sent downriver, marked with the number 2,704, the same number of ships which set sail carrying African slaves across the Atlantic to work in the British sugar plantations. Several million of them died on the journey across the ocean. Of those who did survive, an estimated one in three died of hunger, disease or ill treatment within 3 years of their arrival in the Caribbean. But 200 years on, just how much can a public commemoration of this kind hope to heal memories and inspire those fighting against injustice in today's world? Questions I put to the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Rowan Williams, on the eve of these anniversary events.
I think it'll be good for us to be reminded of two things to start with. One is quite simply the fact that part of this nation's history is the shameful episode of our involvement, our active involvement in the slave trade. And the other thing, of course, the other side of that, is the amazing moral courage of a group of people who finally persuaded this country to change its policy. And I think that's something which sends out a very good message about what can be achieved by determined political witness by Christians. But I hope also that it'll focus attention on the forms of slavery that still exist in the world, sex trafficking, child labour and so on, and really renew people's commitment to do something about those.
As you say, you'll be remembering people like William Wilberforce, whose faith led him to spearhead this campaign to end slavery. But there were also, as you say, many people also within the church who profited from this terrible trade in human beings. Has this been recognised enough, do you think?
I don't quite know what enough would feel like. It's certainly been recognised, and we continue to keep it before people's minds. The Synod of the Church of England passed a resolution acknowledging this, and there will be very clear elements of repentance and acknowledgement of past sin in the worship over the weekend.
This is an ecumenical initiative, isn't it? Many different churches and religious organisations in Britain taking part in this. But would you say that the Church of England bears a particular responsibility because of its role as the established church?
Undoubtedly, the Church of England has a very particular level of involvement in that history. The Society for the Propagation of the Gospel, of which the Archbishop of Canterbury was president, was, of course, a slave-owning body. It owned two plantations in Barbados. And looking at the minutes of their meetings is not a very edifying experience. So, yes, we do have to put our hands up and say the national church of this country was heavily involved in this, and so that's why both archbishops are there to acknowledge this.
As you say, there was an official apology issued by the Church of England last year. Do you see this as the beginning of a process of reflection?
I think inevitably we'll go on thinking about what the implications are of acknowledging our complicity. And it does put a challenge to us about how we continue to deal with the legacy of slavery, which is still around in the world, the legacy of that huge trauma inflicted on Africa in the 16th, 17th and 18th centuries especially. And yes, it concentrates our minds, I think, a good deal on what we ought to be doing about that now.
I'm gonna tell God all my troubles when I get home. I'm gonna tell God all my troubles when I get home.
As you say, you're talking about these legacies of that slave trade, but how much do you actually think that the modern day problems of racism or trafficking or oppression can be directly blamed on this past history?
I don't know how far they can be directly blamed. The point is really that they're analogous to that past, and that some things have been allowed to grow up and go almost unnoticed and unchallenged, just as the slave trade was. So we're really asking people to open their eyes to those current things that are, in their own way, just as much an offence to human dignity and human liberty, and to say, keep noticing these things, keep asking what can be done for them.
There are many different parts of this commemoration. Can you tell us a bit about, for example, the national service that's going to be held in Westminster Abbey? I understand that Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor will be taking part in that.
That's very much an attempt to find a voice for not just the churches, but the whole nation, as is appropriate in Westminster Abbey. And to do that not just in a context where we're, you know, like making ourselves feel guilty, because that's not the point. It's just an acknowledgement that this is our history, and it's still a challenge before us. So it's, I think, an effort on Tuesday to try and make sure that people do raise in their own minds the awareness of that history, do ask those questions about the future, not just as believers, but simply as people in this country who have that legacy to live with and confront.
Scorn and abuse me, but I'm going to live so God can use me.
During your recent visit to Tanzania, you went to Zanzibar and saw the actual slave pits and the chains, didn't you, where people were held before they were shipped over to Britain. That made an enormous impression on you, didn't it? Can you tell us a bit about that?
I think when you see the actual, what you might call the technology of inhumanity, close up like that, it's particularly shocking. You think all sorts of people, not completely unlike you and me, would be involved in this, would be involved in shackling women and children, in pushing them into a space the size of a bathroom in their 50s and 75s, crowded on top of each other, knowing nothing of what was going on, terrified out of their minds. And you think, what is it that makes people think that's normal? I think that was the most frightening thing about it. That and the sense of the mental torment that people must have gone through, not knowing what the future was. People who've been captured, taken to a place where nobody spoke their language, passed from hand to hand, beaten, brutalized, raped, with no notion of what's going on. And that particular element of sheer mental torture, I think, hadn't quite registered on me as forcibly as it did there when I stood in those little rooms.
There's an Anglican cathedral, isn't there, now built on top of that old slave
market? Yes, the Anglican mission in Zanzibar played a very significant part in combating slavery in its last days in East Africa in the late 19th century. And you might almost say it's a kind of attempt to make reparation for the involvement of the Anglican Church in other parts of the world earlier. So when the cathedral was built, it was a very deliberate decision to build it on the site of the slave market. And where the old flogging post had been, in front of the high altar of the new cathedral, there's a small circle of red marble to remind everybody that that's what was there, that's what happened.
You've also just returned from a visit to Angola and South Africa, haven't you, to talk about the church's vital role today in trying to help combat problems of poverty to achieve these Millennium Development Goals.
That's right.
Were you encouraged by what you saw there, or perhaps overwhelmed by the huge problems that these countries still face?
It's difficult not to be overwhelmed, but I think when you see that even the smallest difference can be made by small dedicated groups, you realise that is such a lot better than nothing. The small project we visited just outside Luanda in Angola, where we saw work that was being done by the Congregational Church, the Anglican Church and Christian Aid in partnership, simply teaching simple handicrafts to local women so that they could sell their goods, and providing creche facilities and some education for their children. A very small thing, but it's not too difficult to multiply, in fact, with a little bit of extra resourcing from outside. These small-scale, what you might call low-intensity, low-budget enterprises can be delivered all over the place without a huge bureaucracy. And I think that's the great strength of the church in these settings. They can deliver measurable goals without a big bureaucracy. That's, I think, what government and NGOs need to learn to work better with.
And my thanks there to Dr. Rowan Williams, Archbishop of Canterbury and leader of the Worldwide Anglican Communion.